Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Well, this year, of course, marks the 100th anniversary of the publication of James Joyce's Ulysses. And this month, Nuala O'Connor's recently released novel, Nora, a love story of Nora Barnacle and James Joyce, has been selected as the One Dublin, One Book choice for 2022, spanning the time from the couple's first meeting through their often turbulent and difficult life together. The book chronicles the stages their enduring love went through until the glory days when Joyce's literary genius was eventually recognised. And the book's author, Nuala O'Connor, joins me now. Good morning, Nuala.
Hi, Miriam. Lovely to be here.
Really interesting book. Look, we know as part of One Dublin, One Book, everyone is encouraged to read Nora over the next month. So can you tell us a little about it and what led you to write a book about Nora Barnacle and her relationship with James Joyce?
Yeah, I suppose I like maverick women and individualistic people, and Nora was a natural maverick. I was drawn to her, I suppose. I had read Brenda Maddox's wonderful biography of her in 1989 when I was in my late teens. And then I moved to Galway and I was going to the Nora Barnacle Museum annually for the Bloomsday celebration there, her mother's house on Bowling Green. The Pat Murphy film, I was inspired by that. That came out in 2000. But really, it wasn't until I was studying Italian by night in NUI Galway a few years ago, and I had to write an essay about Joyce's time in Trieste. But all the time I was doing the research for the essay, I was kind of peeping over his shoulder at Nora, wondering what she was up to in the background and how did she feel about her life with Joyce. And so I wrote a short story, and this is something I often do. I write, it's almost like a tester piece. I don't think of it like that, but I write something small. But I discovered in writing it, so the story is just about their meeting and their flit to Europe. I wasn't finished with Nora. I wanted to stay communing with her, learn more about her and follow her to her end, really.
Yeah, she's a fascinating woman. I'd love to have met her. Take us back, Nuala, to the start of their story. Where did they first meet?
So they met on Nassau Street in Dublin. Joyce spotted this auburn-haired, erect, lovely-looking young woman walking along the street. Nora, at the time, was working in Finn's Hotel there at the bottom of Nassau Street. And she was out for a stroll. Joyce spotted her and he approached her. And this was the 10th of June, 1904. He asked, could they walk out together at some point? They made a date for the 14th, but Nora didn't turn up. And Joyce wrote her this very sort of polite but slightly castigating letter asking, would she care to meet him again? That's if you haven't forgotten me, he said. So they did meet on the 16th of June and they walked out to Ringsend and had an intimate moment there. And the rest is history, as they say. They stayed together until Joyce's death in 1941.
And in the book, you imagine their life together, Nuala, channeled through Nora's voice. She was an extraordinary character, wasn't she? And she ran very much against the grain of what was expected of her in early 20th century Ireland.
Yeah, she would have gone against everything that would have been expected of her by eloping unmarried with Joyce in 1904. You know, they went off to Europe and she was taking a huge leap of faith. Like, she didn't. She was putting herself in a position by going, and she very quickly became pregnant with their first child, Giorgio. So there was no return for her. But she did come to him as a very sort of adventurous and cheerful, optimistic, charismatic person. She had a natural cheerfulness, which must be a lovely way to go through life, and a sort of an openness. She was very resilient. And so she was the perfect foil to him as a sort of a tender, sensitive, you know, nervy, accusatory, brilliant individual. They were the lovely yin and yang to each other. She really was the water to his fire. You know, she kept him straight when he needed to be kept straight. He had a lot of issues with his eyes. He had very bad eye trouble. And he also, as you may know, drank often, daily. In fact, he was dependent on alcohol, physically addicted to it. So she used to drag him home from bistros to make sure he'd write, because she knew how important writing would be to their future and to him personally.
And as you say, they ran away together. They left Ireland in 1904 unmarried. In fact, they remain unmarried for 27 years. Obviously not a big deal today at all. But at the turn of the last century, this was presumably, Nuala, a far greater risk for Nora than it was for Joyce.
Yeah, she would have liked to have married, but he didn't agree with marriage. He was against the church, and he felt the church had kind of killed his mother by forcing her into a position where she had the life she had, where she had child after child. And there was, his father was a profligate, a drinker, and lost their money and moved house at night to avoid bailiffs and all of this. So Nora, Joyce explained himself to her. She had no illusions about what she was getting into. And in fact, when they went away, Joyce more or less became his father in the sense that he drank a lot. They moved house very, very often. He was very shallow rooted. It seems he needed that in order to write. He needed new things to write about. So he created Flurry. He throve on Flurry, as his biographer Elman said. So they were constantly moving, but there was such love and loyalty between them. She really loved Joyce the man, as opposed to Joyce the writer. And with her own sort of natural dignity and good-heartedness, she was able for the life that he presented her with. It's not that she was uncomplaining. She regularly threatened to get the kids baptized and to leave him and all of this. And as you said, eventually they did marry, but that, Joyce said, was for testamentary reasons. Giorgio wanted to get married, and Giorgio's wife, future wife, actually insisted that Giorgio be illegitimized, if you know what I mean. Mm. Yeah.
After they eloped unmarried in 1904, how did her family respond to that?
Well, she didn't tell them. She ran away. She had already run away to Dublin. Her uncle Tommy had beat her for going out with a Protestant boy who he disapproved of this. And Nora ran away to Dublin. She already had plenty of work experience under her belt and got a job really quickly. She'd been working from the age of 12 as a portress for the Presentation Nuns, and she got a job quickly in Finn's and was settled there in a much better position than Joyce was at the time. He was essentially couch surfing and he had no job. He was finished college but wasn't doing anything. So Nora was sort of in a better position than he was, and better able for life. So when they left, she sent a postcard from Paris. Paris was one of the stops along their journey. They eventually settled in Trieste, and she just said that she had gone away. You know, so she had been raised by her grandmother, and her grandmother had died when she was 12. So she wasn't insanely close to her own family of her mother and her seven siblings. Her parents had separated. But they became warmer over the years. Nora eventually started writing to her mother, and she came back to visit a couple of times, and they became closer. But and Joyce really liked Nora's mother. You know, there's a lovely letter that he wrote to Nora when he was visiting Ireland by himself and she was back in Trieste. And he said, "Your mother sang The Lass of Ockram to me, your song, sitting at her table in Bowling Green." And it's just this lovely little scene of the two of them sitting together.
And talking about letters, I gather when writing this novel, people often asked you about, I suppose, the extraordinary letters, intimate letters between Joyce and Nora. Presumably, they were difficult for you to ignore.
Yeah, so the erotic letters were brought into the public domain, much to the disgust of Joyce's only living direct relative, Stephen Joyce, his grandson, Giorgio's son. Naturally, it's very difficult to read about your grandparents' private life and then for the entire public to be able to read them too. But the letters are extraordinary. They're very erotic. They're very upfront. They're very sensual. And they sort of spill over as well into these poetic trances where Joyce is praising Nora. You know, he says to her in one of them, "Everything that's exalted and noble and deep and true and moving in what I write comes, I believe, from you." So he had great faith and love and respect for Nora. And I think that's something that people sometimes miss. They just look at they're sometimes called the filthy letters. They look at those parts of the letters and, you know, they're very titillating and strange. But then there's all this lovely tenderness in them too.
They were clearly madly in love, Nuala, and clearly you can see from the letters had this incredible sex life. Did that endure during their long relationship?
There is evidence that Nora sort of complained to her sister later in life that he's always at me kind of stuff, you know, and that she wasn't anymore. She had had uterine cancer. And so I suppose between illness and the problems that they faced, you know, fame came with Ulysses in 1922, but it didn't bring maybe the things that people think fame brings, which are, you know, money and wonderfulness. It brought money in the sense that he had sponsors and now he was published and he had acclaim. But, you know, the book was banned in several places and it was difficult to get it published in the UK, for example. And it got scathing reviews from everyone, from Virginia Woolf to, you know, Irish reviewers weren't very happy with it. They just found it very untoward. And he wasn't valued here until much later on, you know.
And I suppose in their time and decades together, Joyce, he uprooted home and family life on a regular basis, didn't he, with moving homes and countries several times. Do we know how Nora felt about this constant upheaval in their lives?
I think she was ripe for adventure at the start, but that gets very wearing when you have two small children and you're continuously changing language, changing friend group, changing schools for the children. So after a while, she asked, could they go and live in London? She picked London because it was English speaking. It would be easier for her. Now, she did speak French and Italian was their home language. But I suppose she wanted, as she grew older, a more settled spot. They lived at 19 addresses in Paris alone. You know, one of them addresses, they were there for about 5 years. But she longed for a home of her own, a place to entertain and to have her own furniture. Simple stuff like that that she didn't have. So she did beg him. And then she came back to visit Ireland one time and she asked, she said, I want to stay. Will you send me an allowance? And he agreed to it. But it was around the time of civil war and stuff in Ireland. And so he got very upset. He didn't do well without her by his side and, you know, begged her to come back. Please come back. He just didn't want her staying there and him to be alone.
And we all know his genius, but he wouldn't have been the easiest of men. You mentioned earlier, you know, he drank heavily even when money was tight. How difficult did his drinking make life for them?
I suppose Nora wasn't a drinker. And so when you're trying to deal with someone who's drinking, it's hard. But I mean, the drinking is never about the drinking, is it? It's about he's trying to drown the sorrows or the traumas of his upbringing or his own sort of personality. He was a kind of a nervy, sort of an accusatory individual. He had a tendency to fall out with people, but he was also a great man for getting people to do things for him. She used to keep him in line as much as she can and remind him that he needed to write and take him home so that he could write. And he would be shouting as she shoved him into a taxi, save me from these scenes, you know. But she was pragmatic and practical and knew that it was better for everyone if Jim got his writing done.
How important was Nora, do you think, as a support for Joyce? I mean, would Ulysses have been written without her, for instance?
No. I mean, Nora had that very 20th century approach to marriage in Ireland. The man came first. So she stoically prioritised his needs, his health, his wants above everyone else's, including her own and the two children's. So Ulysses was written over 7 years, mostly in Zurich during World War I. And Nora minded him. She made sure that he had the hospital treatments he needed. She made sure he had time to write, to the extent that she sometimes brought the children away to places like Locarno, because he was deep in the writing and she knew he needed to get on with it. And so she left him there to do it. She was extraordinary, really. A proper, loving, supportive spouse, the kind of spouse that every writer needs.
She obviously adored him.
Yeah, there was huge love between them. They adored each other. They worshipped each other. He worshipped her. You know, he said he'd only write noble things by listening at the doors of her heart, for example. You know, she was everything to him. He really relied very, very heavily on her. And she was more, you know, able for life than he was. He was very reliant on her and didn't have like a wide circle of people, or it was always changing people. So he tended to rely hugely on her. I think it was Elman, his biographer, who said that the two most important things to Joyce in his life were his writing and his family, meaning he, Nora, Giorgio and Lucia, just the four of them.
And we know, of course, she was hugely the inspiration for Molly Bloom and Ulysses. But what did Nora herself think of Joyce's work and of Molly Bloom?
She wasn't a literature lover in the sense that she didn't love the kind of modernist stuff he was writing. She didn't like Molly that much. She used to call her that fat Molly, you know. She just didn't like her. She disapproved of her, but she liked Finnegan's Wake. Now, there's a book, she said, about the Wake, which is interesting because it's just such a strange, poetic, musical, almost impenetrable text, you know. So, yeah, it's funny the way you would expect her to have revered all of it. She loved the poetry, actually. She knew some of his poems off by heart and would recite them, you know. So she had great respect for what he was doing while not being a huge literature fan. She liked the Daily Mail. She liked Penny Dreadfuls. That was her taste.
And we spoke just a few minutes ago about how much they adored each other. And there's a nice moment, isn't there? A friend, Arthur Parr, commented once on being out with them.
Yeah, he was walking behind them to a restaurant in Paris and he just saw them glance at each other. And he thought to himself, they like as well as love each other, you know, which is a lovely thing in a long marriage.
So your book, having been selected now, is the One Dublin, One Book choice for 2022. Tell me what that involves, because it's not just about everyone reading the book, is it, Nuala?
No, it's a fantastic initiative by Dublin City Council, led by the libraries. And it's basically over the course of the month of April, there are 28 events and I'm directly involved with 17 of those. So some of them are online, most are in person. They're all free. But if people want to join in, they need to book. So go to the One Dublin, One Book website and they can book there. On the 21st of April, we have our main event in St. Anne's Church on Dawson Street, where Paula Shields will interview me. But there's also dramatic readings by actors. There's music from Julia Spanu and Moxie Sings. So there's a variety of events. There's one on the love letters, for example. There's one I'm doing with the photographer Deirdre Brennan, where I'm talking to her about her Ulysses inspired photographs. There's a musical event in Rathmines Library. So a huge variety of events.
And I know as well, Nuala, that, you know, our book on one here is also going to feature Nora, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It's starting next week.
Brilliant. Now, the book will be widely available. People, they can borrow it, can't they, from their local library?
Yeah, in hard copy or in digital or in audio form, it's available for readers. Yeah, and just to say, it's Kathy Belton that's reading it on the book on one, who's a wonderful Irish actress.
And I know for some people, Ulysses is a brilliant but challenging read. But I'm assuming if everyone in Dublin is to be encouraged to read your book, Nuala, they needn't fear it to the same extent as they might perhaps if they were embarking on reading Ulysses.
No, my novel is a far cry from Ulysses. It's Nora telling her story. So she'll be like a voice in your ear, taking your hand along through her life with Joyce and her love and her experience of motherhood, her experience of being an Irish woman abroad. It's very, very readable. And, you know, people will recognise plenty of Irishness and it's an accessible book. Don't worry, it's no Ulysses.
It's also been said of your book that by the end of it, Joyce is less likeable and Nora more admirable. Would you consider that's a fair assessment?
Well, I love them both, of course, you know, and I think my empathy and understanding and love for Joyce only grew by doing the research and by writing the book. I probably would have had maybe some throwaway negative thoughts about him as regards his sitting up on other people and stuff like that over the course of his life. But I felt I understood him a lot more by the end. Yeah, people have said, how did she put up with him to me and that? And I just think Nora was one of those hardy individuals who is stoic and optimistic. And, you know, it was a very sort of Irish female response to hardship. You know, she just got on with it. But I think, yeah, people, I hope, will see what an admirable person she was. His rock, his muse, so important to the entire project of Joyce. But I do hope they will like Jim too, you know.
As she called him always.
As she called him, yeah.
Well, look, congratulations, Nuala, on being selected as the One Dublin, One Book choice for this year. And your book, Nora, A Love Story of Nora Barnacle and James Joyce, is published by New Ireland. It'll also be widely available, as I said, in libraries nationwide. And for further details on all the events, they can be found at onedublinonebook.ie. Nuala O'Connor, thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Thanks a million, Miriam.